Hello, and welcome to Cheese Flicks with Logan and Andrew, a show where two friends crawl through a river of bad movies and hope to come out clean on the other side.
Welcome to Cheese Flicks with Logan and Andrew. My name is Snake Plissken. I mean, Logan.
And Andrew's here, too.
Oh, hey, Andrew. This week on Cheese Flicks, we are going to grill the shit out of Escape from New York, the classic John Carpenter film.
Yep, 1981, starring Kurt Russell.
It's on Netflix, so if you have not seen it, I highly recommend it. If nothing else, it's a cult classic. This is I picked this last week when I saw it was on Netflix, and I really actually like Escape from L.A. I know I've seen that more often than Escape from New York, but this was the original, and I think it did pretty well for its age. You know, considering it was made in the early 80s. I mean, this was, like, right after Star Wars came out, I guess. Which, you know, it's maybe something hard to put it up against. Because didn't, like, Star Wars came out, what, 77?
Mm-hmm.
Or 79 or something? And, like,
You know, 77 for the first one, then 81 and 83.
Yeah. And so this basic plot summary is it's 1997. And, New York is a prison colony with a giant wall around it.
Manhattan.
Like just, oh, Manhattan, sorry.
Yeah, so Manhattan Island.
And what ends up happening is the president is flying. You know, it's set up a little bit differently, but long story short, president's Air Force One is hijacked, crash-landed inside this prison colony, and they try to mount a rescue, but the prisoners are, of course, are already, you know, captured the president, and are like, if you don't get out of here in 30 seconds, we're going to kill him. So they have to do a little bit more of a clandestine operation and send in the one and only Snake Plissken.
Who was already going to be a prisoner. You know, he was basically in the intake process for the prison. So they're like, hey, since you're already going, why don't you do this? And if you make it out alive in 24 hours, we'll grant you full immunity.
Well, a full pardon. Not,
then you're dead anyway, so good luck.
Yeah. Yeah, and they put like this what do you call it, like a weird bug in his neck to it was a hilarious special effects thing where they just like press some air guns against his neck, but yeah, he had some kind of like timer, I guess, that would go off and blow up his like arteries if he didn't get back in time. So it's kind of like
also if he tried to escape.
Right.
Like, if he just tried to run away. Kind of like Suicide Squad, and like, the things they inject in their neck and, like, blow their heads off. That's pretty much what...
Never saw it.
Yeah, you're not missing much.
That's why I never saw it. That's what everyone said.
Yeah, that would definitely... We could say a lot about Suicide Squad on this podcast. So yeah, basically the movie's about Snake kind of trying to locate the president and then get him out alive, and then he's also supposed to try to get this briefcase that is handcuffed to the president's arm that contains a cassette tape of super importance. And basically they tell Snake that it's kind of all or nothing. Like, we need the president out, we need the cassette out, and it needs to happen. He's actually got like 22 hours to do it because the president has to get to the super important meeting.
Right. Yeah, and it was like a giant war, I guess. There was like a war, I guess, about to go on or something. Then they kind of talk about that.
Yeah, it was basically to prevent something awful from happening, and only the president could do it, and he had the information. And of course, there's only one copy of the information, even though it's on a cassette tape. And cassette tapes, from my memory, are copied pretty easily. Like, I myself, in the 90s, had a two-deck cassette tape player that could copy a tape.
It was so hilarious, too, because it's like in this digital age when you have, like, you know, the president's carrying a briefcase, you know, handcuffed to his arm, and that's, like, the high security way of doing things, and then he had the cassette tape with that was, like, super important. It's like, that is the least secure, most easily destroyed, like, that was a little corny for me. Like, even in that day and age, like, nobody would buy that you would have this kind of shit on a cassette tape. I don't know. Maybe they did.
Well, I guess it's funny. It's like, you have to think, like, this, they made it in 1981, and how, like, they weren't, you know, how well were they imagining what technology would have been 16 years in the future?
Yeah. So
the movie's made in 81, taking place in 97.
But you had Star Wars that came out at least 2 or 3 years before, and it's like, they had time. I mean, I know, and this was already kind of on that sci-fi edge of, like, I guess they maybe just didn't want to go too far, because there wasn't a ton of, like, over-the-top sci-fi. It was just, like, I guess for me, it was just that, you know, they have a stealth plane kind of thing with, like, crazy, you know, 3D imaging, and they made it definitely seem like it was a little bit futuristic, but it's just the cassette tape was, I don't know, kind of funny, I guess. Just, yeah, I mean, yeah, but you're right. I mean, like, back then, that probably was, like, the gold standard of audio quality and everything back then. It was probably a lot better than, like, you know, it's like he's going to carry a vinyl record around.
Right, or I guess they wouldn't have been able to imagine. Well, yeah, CD, I guess they were still a couple years away from CDs, because I think the first CD players came out in, like, 85, maybe?
I think it was, like, mid-80s.
Laserdisc. Was that out in 81? I don't think so. No, I couldn't have been that old.
The reel-to-reel.
Yeah. And the president gets kidnapped by the Duke, who is played by Isaac Hayes.
Yeah, there are a lot of big names in this movie, which is, I don't know. I'm like, you know, unfortunately, most of them are dead. But, like, you got Ernest Borgnine in it. You've got Lee Van Cleef, Donald Pleasance, Isaac Hayes, Adrian Barbeau, Harry Dean Stanton. I guess he's still alive. He was an alien. What was he? Apparently he was in the Avengers, too. I'm trying to think of where I've seen him before. Oh, he was in Twin Peaks. That's where I remember him from. So, yeah, there's just a lot of, like, people I'm like, oh, I recognize this person, all the way through the movie, even though the movie is so cheesy. Like, even then, I can't imagine that, you know, this having a crazy huge budget, but maybe it did. I guess it had a $6 million budget. That probably wasn't that shabby.
No, I mean, Star Wars had 10, you know, 4 years earlier, and that wasn't, I don't think, really considered to be a huge budget by any stretch. So I think this was probably moderate to low budget. So that pretty much covers the basic plot of it, and we'll talk a little bit more about the ending in particular here in a little bit. But what did you think of the acting?
Well, I've seen this movie before, so this wasn't like, I wasn't going in blind, but it was, I personally really like the acting. I think it's like, it still feels like obviously a movie, like it's not trying to like suck you into the world. You can tell this is, some of the acting is a little over the top, and these people are playing, you know, very specific type characters. I think I joke about this with Becky when we saw it, but like the movies, both this one and the Escape from LA, like they just, like, there's a lot of like stereotypes that are presented in the movie, but they're kind of funny because it's just like, wow, they, you know, of course, like the gang members and it's just these funny, like you would just imagine, like, this is what, if you were to ask your parents, like, what's a gang member like? Like, this is what they would describe. You know, like, there's no, like, really deep thought put into some of the way that some of this stuff works. And I just thought it was, you know, it's funny, but, like, I would definitely say the acting and is pretty on point for what this film is. We may have just had some technical difficulties, so if you're just now joining us after a strange glitch, welcome back. And we were discussing acting, I think. So I had just given my points of view. Now it's Andrew's turn.
Yeah, so I think I pretty much said that I don't know how much of this will be on before, and I'm repeating myself, but whatever. That most of it was pretty good for the main cast. Some of the secondary characters got a little ridiculous. Kind of like the Duke's like henchman with the crazy hair.
Oh yeah, I wrote him down as Crazy David Bowie Beetlejuice.
that's a pretty good description. I like Snake and the Duke and the Brain, who's another character that you meet that kind of helps Snake a little bit and then kind of doesn't help him. Like, he's not really, pretty much just out for himself. So overall, yeah, the acting was pretty good in comparison to a lot of the other Cheese Flicks movies. Certainly probably ranks in the top third easily.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just the way their characters were written. I mean, the fact that you have like the Brain, and he's like the smart one, and then you've got like the crazy guy, and even like all the cops, like the police officers in the beginning. I mean, these are like the most like basic stereotypical, like, I'm a cop and that's all I am, and I gotta do what I gotta do. It's just like, okay,
yeah, very one-dimensional. One thing I wish that I would have liked to had some more backstory about some of the characters. How did they end up in there? What did like Ernest Borgnine's character do to end up in here? Because a lot of the people that are in there, they don't seem like they're all that bad people, a lot of them are, as you said, very stereotypical, and there's a lot of violence and whatnot, but some of them are just seem like, I mean, were they throwing white collar criminals in here? And
I mean,
they mentioned that Snake, I guess, had robbed the Federal Reserve, so that's pretty severe. And then didn't Ernest Borgnine? This didn't make sense to me. Didn't he say he had? How long had he been in there?
Or
he
said 30 years? He was like, I've been driving the same cab for 30 years.
So I guess that would have to mean that he was like driving a cab in Manhattan and just never left. So did he like potentially not actually commit a crime?
Yeah, maybe.
That was something in kind of jumping forward a little bit to the overall plot of why on earth would you take such like high valued real estate, all these buildings and that, in Manhattan and turn it into a prison? Like, if you want to build an island prison, I'm sure there's plenty of islands around, in the U.S., either off the coasts or something, that you could build a prison colony on without sacrificing such a valuable location.
Right. With such historical significance, too, I don't know, but it's just it probably is just because it's so recognizable, and it was just chosen because, like, everybody knows.
Yeah, Manhattan. I mean, I guess why you would do it in terms of a story standpoint. Like, in Escape from L.A., isn't it, like, an earthquake separated Los Angeles from the rest of the country or something?
Something like that, yeah. And they just, again, it's like the, I think it's a, like a whole other thing, is that's where they send all, like, the dregs of society.
So. In terms of the effects, they were okay. They pretty much fit with most of the other big 80s action movies, I guess. Nothing really stuck out as being awful. I will say the sound effects I didn't think were all that great, but I think that's probably pretty common. Like, you can kind of tell it was all things done on a soundstage, added in after the fact, stuff like that.
Right.
But there really wasn't a lot in terms of, like blood and gore. It wasn't really all that violent. I mean, to me, honestly, overall, the movie was pretty slow. I mean, it was an hour and 40 minutes, and it was kind of dragging for me. There wasn't a whole lot of action until at least halfway into the movie. And a lot of it's just Snake kind of walking around trying to find the president.
Yeah, this definitely is one of those movies where, like, the plot or the setting is part of the story. Like, I think that they put a lot of effort into making this, city, like a prison city, like New York is like a wasteland, and I think they really wanted that to sink in. So there was a lot of shots of Snake just, like, walking around with, like, you know, barrel fires everywhere and, you know, views of the city that is just totally, you know, destroyed. And I'm sure that was, you know, back then that was probably like, wow, this is really crazy to think about. You know, like, what if, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah, but now that's not that big of a deal, and I think too, like, they did a lot of the I did like the realistic effects. So, like, it seemed like every time they did, like, an aerial shot of New York, there was, like, a model of it. Like, someone, like, spent a lot of time to build, like, a model New York City that was, like, destroyed, and, like, I thought that looked really cool. Like, because you obviously didn't have, like, super high end graphics back then to do something like that. And there were a few shots where, like, you know, especially when he's flying in that, like, stealth glider thing, you know, not when he's looking at his computer screen, but when you see, like, shots of the glider flying over the city and you see, like, you know, just the tower, some of the buildings have crumbled. And I have, like, an appreciation for that because it's, like, I just think it looks neat, even though it doesn't really hold up. But I still think it's really cool because, you know, somebody spent all that time making those.
Yeah, it's definitely something you don't see a lot of anymore, some of those basic, like, practical effects. It's just they always go with CGI.
Well, you can make it look probably, you know, almost, if not more, in a lot of respects, realistic. I mean, I definitely still think there's there should be a blend. Like, I think the Mad Max Fury Road is always kind of heralded as, like, a movie that has been recent in being made, but also is, like, a good blend of, like, practical effects and CGI, and not, like, leaning too heavily on one or the other.
Right, yeah. So, overall, what did you think of the story?
Oh, it was super corny. And, you know, and it didn't make any damn sense. But, like, the thing, too, is so bizarre, is, like, you know, when you go through this movie, there isn't really a whole lot of ups and downs or twists and turns. It's pretty straightforward. He gets captured. They rescue the president. You know, there's this, like, last scene where they're driving the car across the bridge trying to escape from the Duke. And the scene where they're, like, lifting the president up, I just, for some reason, and maybe it's because I'm older and I've got a more jaded view of life, but, like, the whole time I'm like, why would they lift Snake up? Like, why would they even come back for him? You know? Like, they got the president out.
They kind of had to, because Snake had the tape.
Oh, okay. That maybe makes a little bit more sense. Because I'm sitting there like, why would they even leave? They would just be like, who cares? Like, we got the president. He's over the, you know, the railing. But, yeah, so then...
Yeah, I guess it was just... I think there might even have been, like, where the rope didn't come back down right away. And then it did, maybe after the president was like, nah, he's got the tape, you know. Because the president made a point of asking Snake for it, and he's like, no, I'm going to hold on to this a little while longer.
Yeah.
But that, yeah, there's a lot of things in this, like, you wouldn't really call them plot holes, I guess. It's just decisions that are made that don't make any sense.
You know?
At one point, they capture Snake, and the Duke puts him in a fighting ring with this, like, monstrosity of a human being. And, like, it's literally bats with nails driven through them and using metal trash can lids as shields was kind of funny. And then in the middle of all this, some of the other characters actually rescue the president. So everybody in the fighting area, including the Duke and all of his guards, like, run away, just leaving Snake there by himself, completely unguarded. So he can just leave and you know, try to catch up with the president. And all I can think is, like, this is the classic sort of Bond movie thing of, why wouldn't you just kill him?
Right.
They had him, he had been shot in the leg with an arrow. They had him captured and, like, unconscious on a table. They could have just, broke his neck. Done. Bad guy taken out. There was no lack of opportunity. Why on earth in this sort of time crunch situation would you have a gladiator fight? I just stuck out as being, like, that just is beyond stupid. Especially coming from a guy who's supposed to have been smart enough to have essentially taken over Manhattan in this prison colony.
Yeah, but don't you get it? That's what it's like in prison. Like, that's what I meant, too. Like, that whole stereotype of, like, this is what would happen. You know, like, this like, Lord of the Flies, we're going to make him do a gladiatorial battle. I don't know. I just thought that, you know, again, it's, like, just kind of silly. And...
Well, yeah, it's like, yeah, that, and then in that whole world towards the beginning, you see that someone's, like, staging plays. That's when you first meet Ernest Borgnine, is in, like, a broken-down theater that these guys are, like, still performing some kind of play in, which it was weird. Didn't it look to you like the people on stage were all like in drag? They were all...
Oh, they were. Yeah, it was like a drag show kind of thing.
But there's also women in the prison.
Right. Well, you know, it could have just been a fun night at the theater.
Yeah. So some of the stuff in the world, like, I would have liked more explanation of sort of the... like, what was life like day to day for these people in this prison colony.
Right.
We didn't get a ton of that, because Snake isn't in there in the beginning. He gets dropped into it, and all that. So, and then there's, the one real big thing at the end. I don't know if you know where I'm going.
The tape?
Yeah. So Snake, as it turns out, switched out the tapes. He kept the, you know, top secret information tape for himself and gave like just some music tape to the president. And then the movie basically ends with the president giving this speech, this broadcast that's supposed to save the world, and is like pops in the cassette tape to play it, and it's just some
stupid. Like, well, he took one of Ernest Borgnine's tapes out of his cab.
Yeah.
And it was just some goofy like music.
And then you see Snake like pulling the tape out of the cassette and ruining it, and just like walking off into the sunset.
Basically. Roll credits.
And that doesn't make any sense. You were hired to do a job to get both these guys out to get immunity. Don't you think that if they find out you switched the tapes or that you brought the wrong tape, they're just going to throw your ass back in prison?
Yeah. It's just hilarious to me, because it's like, that's the whole point of this movie, though. Is like, Snake Plissken is just this like untouchable badass, you know? Like, I don't know. I still think that I think this movie did it right in a way. Like, I felt like it doesn't take itself too seriously, and that's why it worked for me. I didn't really think it was like the best movie ever made or anything like that. But it was. I don't know. I think it's probably a nostalgia thing for me, because I really do enjoy the movie. But it's like, yeah, that's kind of expected, though, I guess. Like, that's the whole, like, persona of Snake, is, like, he just, you know, doesn't care, and he gets away with shit because he's just a badass, you know? But you're right, like, of course they would have checked the tape before playing it, and of course if they noticed that he wasn't, you know, being up front, they would have, like, arrested him immediately, like, where's the actual tape, you moron? Like, you know? Right. Not just letting him, like, walk away as the president's making a huge ass of himself.
Yeah, and then that whole plot device of the president has to make it to this meeting or broadcast this tape by a specific time. Like, you're telling me the president of the United States can't make a phone call, be like, give me 10 minutes?
Right.
I'm the president of the United States. Give me 10 minutes. I feel like if you're going to do that, it needs to be something like these missiles are going to be launched or a bomb is going to go off, but they didn't explain well enough for me, I don't think, why this time limit was so important. It kind of obviously was just there to add drama to the story of he has a limited amount of time to get the president and get him out of there. But
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, overall for me, like, the acting was good. What action there was pretty good, but I felt like for an action movie, it was pretty slow and just kind of boring. It just, there should have been more fight scenes. Maybe if he would have gone in there with, like, a team of convicts, you know, where they kind of give the offer to all of them of, go get the president, the ones that make it will let you guys out of there, just to have more characters that you can kind of go through. Because he make, I mean, he takes one arrow to the leg, and that's it. He doesn't, like, I don't think he doesn't ever get shot or stabbed, or, you know, he pretty much walks through it unscathed with the exception of the one arrow.
We had those sweet zebra camo pants.
And that amazing, like, Mac 10 with a silencer that was...
That was a pretty cool gun.
Baseball bat.
Yeah, had like a sniper scope on it.
Yeah, and had like a infinite ammo enchantment on it, apparently.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, that's the glory of those movies back in the day. Because that also was around the same era that, you know, all the Arnold Schwarzenegger movies came out and the action hero shit was in full swing, so... This fit right in with all that crap.
So did you have like an overall score?
Oh, 4 out of 5, easy. The only thing I'm taking it away from is just because it's a little too slow, maybe. But at the same time, I gave it a lot of credit just because I think I love the music. That's one thing I didn't really touch on. But the John Carpenter like played a lot of the music. He wrote and directed the music too. All the crazy synths, and I just think that was really, it fit in well with the film, and I don't know, I just like the movie. I think it's fun. I think it's definitely one of those movies you could, you know, not, you could miss a lot of it and still know what's going on, but I don't know, I like it. So what do you think?
My final score, 2 out of 5.
Ooh,
yeah.
It, John Carpenter.
Now, I like John Carpenter. Like, The Thing is one of my all-time favorite horror movies. One of the earlier, probably one of the first few rated R movies I ever got to watch as a kid. So it's not a ding against John Carpenter necessarily. I think just older movies are a little slower maybe than some movies today. And I think they could have quickened it up a little bit. I think if you cut 10 minutes out of this movie, it probably makes the whole thing just feel a lot snappier.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this might be the biggest difference in ratings we've ever had. I'll have to look. So you ready for the next one?
Yes.
So, you know, I know when we did Hard Target 2, we talked about how we are skipping straight to the sequel and maybe we should go back and watch the first one.
Yeah.
We're not going to do that this time, because the first one's not available anywhere I can find, but we are going to watch Hayride 2.
Hayride 2.
Yeah, it's on Netflix, and I'll just read the quick little blurb that Netflix has. It says, "The serial killer Pitchfork awakens, determined to hunt down the survivors of his murderous rampage as they recover in a rundown hospital."
Oh. Fear the legend. I just want to let you guys know it's rated R.
Well, this podcast is rated R, isn't it?
I mean, oh yes,
it's super rated R. Well, it's not
the savage killer known as Pitchfork. Oh man,
I mean, this is Cheese Flicks. This isn't like Cheese Flicks Nights or Cheese Dicks or X-rated podcast that has yet to be released.
It's hopefully never going to be released. It's going to stay locked up.
Me and Dan will do it.
Alright. Cheese dicks. Alright, so Hayride 2 coming at you next time we're going to be releasing the show. That's pretty much the best update I can give you.
Can't give you a date because with us
we do this, yeah. It's a roll of the dice. 2 weeks from now, maybe.
Sorry if there's any. If those technical difficulties were weird, hopefully, well, maybe we'll get lucky and we'll just sound like robots like we did that one time. That was fun.
Yeah.
And actually, Hayride 2 will be our 25th episode. And then I think after that, we're going to have a little special episode coming up after that one for you all.
Mm-hmm. So stay tuned. And thanks for joining us on Cheese Flicks.
CheeseDicks.com.
Well. Here at last, dear friends, on the shores of the sea, comes the end of our podcast. Go in peace. I will not say, do not weep, for not all tears are an evil.